lashed out, taking the jams. They sparked and the motes within took on a different formation. "They will be returned," Sabina said, her voice a monotone. I shrugged helplessly and backed out of Dacey's room to look in on Gregoire. Leo had him on the bed with a dozen humans. It was a big, naked mess of blood and sex, ditto on the back and away. Edmund was cuddled between G and Katie and three humans asleep, Ed's arm in an inflatable cast, his thumb wrapped in gauze and supported by shaped metal strips. They were all naked. Something else I didn't need to see. I shut that door and went to feed my face. I was starving. Dion had changed into short shorts tight enough to fit a small child, and his wife-beater t-shirt was stretched across his torso, sequined in rainbow hues with a unicorn on the front. I stole a serving platter and loaded it up with enough bacon and eggs to stuff a great white shark, took a place alone at the long dining table, grabbed some utensils from a basket of knives, forks, and spoons, all standing upright, and started eating. A brown arm and hand reached around me and placed a teapot and an empty mug beside the platter. Emi took the chair beside me, holding a tiny cup of espresso. I gave him the stink eye at his lack of food. I knew what that meant. He'd eat mine. He stole a piece of bacon, ate it. I said nothing. He stole another one, ate it too, then a third. Around the slice of bacon, he said. They couldn't turn Dell. I stared away from the food and out the windows at the pink sunrise, my appetite temporarily throttled. Tears gathered in my eyes and then dried. They were trying to make her an Onorio. Very few survived that transition, and the ones who did were never really the same after. The transformation was mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical. I liked the changes in Bruiser. A lot. But that didn't mean that Del, if she lived as Onorio, would like herself. Eli took another piece of bacon. "You're letting me steal your food," he said. "It's poisoned. I'm letting you get your comeuppance."
"So we'll die together."
Del wasn't dead. Not yet. Maybe she could be saved. I ate a few forkfuls of eggs, forcing them down, thinking, okay, not poisoned.
I love you too, babe.
I frowned. Dion brought me a plate of pancakes with butter on top and syrup that drizzled down the sides. Protein and pancakes, heaven on earth. "I might have to marry you," I said to Dion.
"You and me, oh, let's include Ziggy. We'd make beautiful brides, a threesome walking down the aisle together."
He sashayed off. Eli shook his head, bemused.
"You do know how much you've changed my life, don't you? And you're the smallest part of the weird that my life has become."
"Weird is fun. Keeps you on your toes." "Weird might keep Del alive." He stole another piece of bacon. I turned the platter to make it easier for him to eat from. Eli smiled, took a knife and fork from the upright basket and started eating.
"Beast okay with me eating from your plate?"
he asked. "Beast thinks of you as her kid. I'm surprised she didn't take the fork and feed you." Eli burst out laughing. 5 minutes before the Europeans landed for the night, I was in my whites again. Edmund had insisted on directing my dressing, and because he was in so much pain that he had woken before sunset, I let him, though I put on my own undies, a white uni, and my boots all by myself. He worked with Dion and Ziggy and the rest of the dressing experiment, including a gold turtleneck under doubled gorgets. Queen bitch's makeup, too much, and all of it glittery, I was sure, though I hadn't seen myself yet. And weapons. Lots of them. Edmund, working mostly one-handed, had braided my hair into a fighting queue with a crown of stakes. I wore the Moogle blade in its scarlet velvet-covered scabbard, two long swords and blades all over me. "I'll clank as I walk," I complained. Ed gave me a look that disagreed.
You will be perfect.
No, you will be magnificent, Ziggy said earnestly. And though QB will be dreadfully jealous to have competition, after seeing you I may create a JY ensemble for the next drag queen competition. I'll show a lot more breast, of course.
Of course, I said. And my pants will be a G-string under leather chaps.
Ziggy was currently wearing crinkled gray linen pants and a gray hoodie out of some slick, slubby material like flax.
Unisex clothes, lots of makeup, blinged out flip-flops. I shook my head. He kissed me on the cheek.
I look stunning, Legs. I promise I'll do you proud.
He held up a mirror to me. I looked like a different woman.
Ziggy had applied golden and sapphire shimmer to my lids, a sparkly gold eyeliner over Cleopatra-style black liner mascara that made my lashes look a mile long, a dusting of golden, shimmery cheek color, red lipstick, and the piece de resistance, lines back from my eyes and cheeks like whiskers, drawn in shimmery gold. I didn't have the heart to tell him that none of it would matter when I fought.
Thank you. I look amazing.
Of course you do, honey child. Everything I do is amazing. I didn't go in for the first two rounds. Instead, sitting with the kid and champ in the production security room, studying the low light and infrared cameras for evidence of a witch. The two rubies had been returned by Sabina when she woke, returned without comment. I hadn't asked if Dell lived or died. I was too chicken. But I'd placed the rubies onto the chain at my neck, and they had realigned to my magics the moment I held them. Batteries. Maybe boosters, too. We didn't spot a witch under an obfuscation spell, but what we did see was grim. Katie stood in the center octagonal ring on the sand, her bastard sword held in a backhand stance. She wasn't the Catherine I met when I first came to New Orleans, a confused, olden-day vamp lost in the modern world. Nor was she the Katie who had risen nearly insane from a box of blood. This Katie was vibrant, steady, her power shooting throughout the room, so electric that Titus himself winced in surprise, so strong that I could feel it in the cramped room below. Katie said, I accept the challenge of Posthumus, who seeks the head of my love and my master, Leo Pellissier. Who is Posthumus? I asked, not remembering the name in the long list of combatants.
In a dead voice, Alex said, Marcus, Cassianus, Latinius, Posthumus, founder of the Gallic Empire in 260 or so. He would be old. Skilled, devious. My heart tightened in my chest. The bell dinged. A bearded vamp stepped forward, muscular, short, a powerful barrel of a man. 4 seconds later, Katie was down, her foot nearly severed, her throat sliced from ear to ear and a stake in her chest. Her opponent was dead, both arms severed and his head across the room. But Katie was in bad shape. She was carried up the stairs in a dripping, bloody sheet. Leo's people won the first match. But with Katie down and out, we may have lost the Sangre Duello.
You okay? I asked the kid.
I'm finer than fine, Alex answered, eyes on his cameras, his kinky hair sticking to his sweaty face. It was hot in the closet, with all the equipment running. And no AC. Or as good as I can be without energy drinks, mainlining espresso, and Cliff Bars.
I said nothing. As Sabina talked to Titus and Leo, their voices coming through the windows and not the system, Alex said,
You let Eli fight.
Your brother didn't leave me a choice. He said yes.
You could have cold-cocked him and carried him from the line of fire.
I nodded slowly. Knowing that Alex could see me from the corner of his eye. I could have. I didn't.
You want to tell me why?
Eli wanted that fight. He chose a good weapon, something she wasn't likely to have fired. I'd read the dossier on the woman. Not an acceptable reason. He turned his head and met my eyes, his brownish ones darker in the night. You let him fight. It was an accusation, the words widely spaced and venomous. He misses it, misses the adrenaline rush, the heightened senses. You know it, I know it. I thought this was a good choice, the safest choice. That asshole could have shot him in the head, not the chest. Eli could have not worn a vest. My brother could be dead. I know. I screwed up, I'm sorry. Alex nodded, a minuscule gesture much like one Eli would make. Don't let it happen again, Jeannie. I smiled, my lips stretching for the first time since Eli was shot, knowing that I had no control over Eli's actions at all, but not wanting to say that to Alex. I'll do my best. I tapped one of the screens. Sol, on the outer edges of the island. What's she doing? Walking the periphery of the island. She's been doing it since the EVs came ashore. Okay. I wasn't sure what Sol was doing or planning, but there wasn't much I could do to stop her. Anomaly. He stabbed a different screen. There. A slender shimmer moved up the stairs to the second floor and proceeded to the third floor. Alex said, "Go." I pulled on beast stealth, gripped the rubies, and raced after the sim-shaped shimmer. A camera wolf caught my movement and followed. The smell of magic hit the air, faint but harsh as tar, a curse being cast. As the scent blazed out, I could see Sim, standing on the landing at the third floor, glistening beneath the obfuscation spell, which she couldn't hold strong while casting a curse. I was 10 feet from her and at least 6 feet below her. She raised her arms. The prickle of magic blazed out. There wasn't time. Time. I could. Beast took over. Shoved up with my back legs, I leaped. In midair, I drew a 14-inch vamp killer from a sheath at my calf, spun that arm back, winding up, and took her through the neck, near her head. I landed 14 feet beyond her in front of Sabina. A bloody blade in my hand. My mind thought, "Thank you, Beast." She hadn't let me bubble time. I started to stand upright, stopped, unable to move. A dozen swords were at my throat. Carefully, I set the blade on the floor. "Intruder," I whispered, and sucked in breaths I hadn't taken while I leaped through the air. "Golden, absolutely fucking golden," the camera wolfman said. Sim's death had broken her spell. Her body, blood, and partially attached head were visible. Her lemon scent filled the room, drifting from her body and blood. The wolf moved the camera along her body and up to her head. Sim was dressed vaguely as a pirate, with embroidered vest, a white shirt with full sleeves, thigh-high boots, tight pants, and gaudy mismatched jewelry. "Sorry about the language, champ," the camera wolf added, not sounding at all apologetic. "But that was freaking fabulous." "She was under an obfuscation spell," I said. "Witchcraft in the Sangre Duelo is disallowed. Only in La Danza could it be used." "She wasn't a dueling. You killed her," Titus asked. "For using a spell. Isn't that what the witches do?" With a vamp killer, I turned her head to expose her fangs. "Witch, also a Mithrin, also a member of Clan des Citrons, who are sworn to Titus Flavius Vespianus." With the tip of the blade, I snagged Sim's fancy white shirt and pulled it from the vest. On the front was the emblem of a lizard eating its tail. Titus looked momentarily nonplussed that I knew all this. Then he got over it. "One acting on her own, or a traitor to my cause." "She threw this at me last night." I held up 2 fingers to show I didn't have a weapon and slowly inserted them into a throwing knife sheath. I removed the knife and extended it, hilt first, to Leo. Leo, no weapons drawn, hands clasped behind his back, walked slowly to me and sniffed along its length. Magic, and the mixed blood of humans and Mithrans. A blade improperly cared for, or coated with a death curse. He accepted the blade in one palm, holding it so the light fell on it. Steel, double-sided blades, set in an olive wood hilt. Leo's eyes drifted to Tidus. For Christmas, in the year 1702, you gave me a set of throwing knives made from olive wood. You were my servant, Tidus said dismissively. I gave a similar set of blades to everyone in my retinue. There were hundreds of you. I decimated an entire olive grove to accommodate the wood needed. Without taking his gaze from the Emperor, Leo said, She attacked you yesterday, my enforcer. Who was she attacking this time? I thought back to the wild leap in the air, the direction of Sim's barely seen arms, the people on the other side of her. She wasn't throwing a blade. She was casting a curse. I believe it was directed at Sabina, the outclan priestess. Leo's eyebrow quirked up. Just the one. Indeed. That's what it looked like. I didn't say that. I said with certainty, yes. Beast is best hunter. Beast will eat witch head. Beast will not. Beast hungers. Who sent to her? Tidus asked. You, me, a third party who wishes to rule, Leo said. Any of 100 names come to mind, including Clan de Citron, who killed cattle on my hunting lands before joining with you. They were on your lands. Tidus made a tisk-tisk sound. I would never allow an unsworn Mithrin onto my lands. I control my lands and my cattle better than that. Leo chuckled, that silky sound that coated the flesh of all prey, a laugh full of power and conquest. They are on your boat, sleeping with you and yours, after being on my lands. How did they get from the house where they killed to your ship? Leo's laughter sang in the rafters. They are there, safe. You must ask yourself, what did I offer them to turn on you? Tidus flinched just the tiniest bit. So did I. Had Leo helped the clan to get away and to Tidus? Had he turned them? Had he let those people die and then helped the killers get free? No, I'd have heard. Alex would have heard. Leo was so in discord among Tidus and all his people. Probably. My enforcer, do you know how she came to this island? I moved to the window and called down. Lakeish, we need you up here. To the EVs, I said, Lakeish Dutier, cast the ward around this house. Lakeish stepped up the last step, walked over to the body and silently studied it. She had to have been waiting to be called. When I killed the vamp witch, she probably felt the energies and headed up the stairs. She turned to the room and put her shoulders back. Speaking to Tidus, she said, Each time the Europeans have come ashore, there has been an anomaly at the ward. There is no proof, but there is the anomaly. And we have recorded the timing with electronic security. Sabina said, Points against the Europeans for trying to disable or kill a judge. The next such infraction will result in severe penalty. True death is not ruled out. Tidus said, You cannot bring me to true death. Sabina pulled her gloved hands out of her starched skirts. In one hand was a spear of wood. I can, and I will. Tidus took a step back before he could catch himself. He pursed his lips, then nodded once, regally. Your ruling is accepted. He looked at Leo and some unheard communication seemed to take place. Leo and Tidus stepped silently across the wood floors, both wearing fighting leathers tonight, both moving gracefully, as if they danced a gavotte in some drafty old palace, both with hands clasped behind their backs.
"Do you recognize her?"
Leo asked.
"I do not. You?"
"Liar, liar, royal pantaloons on fire."
"Yes. She is Bensim Meleye, once sworn to Jax Shafru. He tried to take my lands and ended up as a pile of ash."
Tidus looked ever so slightly impressed.
"I wondered what happened to that old pirate. I suppose you should take her head," he said. "Since she hid among your retinue to come ashore, I relinquish the honor to you. Such humiliation should be avenged."
Tidus's eyes went narrow, as he realized he had been both insulted and gifted with the task of taking the head of his sworn scion. But he drew his sword and took Sim's head, cleaned the blade on her clothes.
"Well done, my enforcer," Leo said.
To the Emperor, he said,
"Shall we return to the festivities?"
"Of a certainty."
"Festivities? Fanghead celebrated the weirdest things."
Tidus added, "Though you have a few in leadership positions, with which to continue, do you abdicate New Orleans and the territories you administer?"
"I do not. Do you abdicate the territories of Western Europe?"
"Tedious as it may seem, I do not."
"Then let us cut to the chase," Leo said. "It is an American phrase, meaning that we should cease all this meaningless bloodshed. I suggest that we, you and I, duel tonight."
"We alone?"
Tidus asked, sounding surprised. The two circled back to the witch's dead body and then meandered toward Sabina, who waited patiently at the head of the room.
"But your enforcer has yet to duel."
Enforcer. Glacy was next on the list. Glacy, the hulking woman vamp. I had actually seen video of her fighting. She was deadly, and Leo was trying to keep me safe. Why? Dark Queen. That.
"We alone, on the sand, much like the death match between Kairos and Nicanor," Leo said. "It was a thing of beauty, and the mastership of all of Greece was granted into the talons and fangs of Kairos. It was a splendorous bout."
Tidus agreed, standing beside Leo. The two now looking out the nearest window, standing with much the same posture, feet shoulder-width apart, hands clasped behind their backs.
"The view of the water here is magnificent. I suggest we engage there, on the beach sand, beneath the moon and the stars. Shall we toast to this?"
"Oh-ho!"
Tidus slapped Leo's back in what looked like camaraderie. "I have heard that you will retain the services of a human from the Orient, one who tastes of hazelnuts. Is this so?"
"Ah," Leo said. "Chin Ho. He is actually Gregoire's, but he is here. His name means precious and goodness. He is from the land now known as Goria, and is most beautiful to look upon, as he is to taste. He is about 50 years old and is aging well, like a fine wine. I would be honored to have your opinion,"
Leo said, all civility and elegance.
"I have a lovely woman I would share with you,"
Tidus said. I took off before I barfed. They were talking about humans as if they were liquor and slaves. Ticked me off. I left the third floor and took the stairs to the ground under the house. The fighting rings here had absorbed the blood, and the blood itself had been diluted with water from the shower. In spots, the sand was the pale pinkish color of watery blood. What was a Dark Queen even supposed to do in this situation?
"Jane will fly by cloth over haunches."
"See to my pants."
"Yes. Jane Beast will know what to do, and Jane must do it."
"This is ridiculous. Stupid."
"This is fighting for territory. Beast has fought for territory before.
and has eaten Big Cat who challenged for hunting grounds. That does not make me feel better. Beast is best ambush hunter. Still stupid. Stupid Sangre Duello. Stupid Fangheads. Stupid Leo. Then again, I thought, war between countries where millions of young human men and women died while their leaders sat in safety behind the lines was even more stupid and ridiculous. Plans were made and discarded. Cities were taken and lost. And people died for nothing. Still, this sucked. I went back upstairs and raided Dion's commercial fridge, taking a heaping tureen of roasted pig meat and a single fork to the front porch. I set it on a table and dropped onto a lounge chair, putting my booted feet up, and ate. Bruiser took the chair beside me. He was holding two glasses of wine. I'm not certain of the proper wine for whole smoked pork, but decided on an Australian Cabernet Shiraz and a Chilean Merlot. Which do you prefer? He held out both glasses. Shouldn't you be off doing Honorio stuff? If I have to do another Honorio task, I think I shall go raving mad. I need to be with you. He still held out the glasses. I remembered that the Merlot had sucked all the moisture out of my mouth. I'll have the Shiraz, unless you have a Boone's Farm fuzzy navel. That reminds me of creamsicle, and I'd kill for a creamsicle right now. The words were out of my mouth before I could stop them. Not really, I amended. Not kill. I know what you meant, my love. And no, I kept the Boone's Farm for our celebration when we are safely back home. I shoveled in meat, drank the Shiraz. It was okay. Bruiser seemed to like the Merlot. I thought there was supposed to be only beer on the island, nothing the Euro vamps would approve of. Officially, I brought a few bottles of my own. May I? He asked, gesturing with the wine glass at my tureen. I offered him my fork. He waved it away and took some of the pulled pork in his fingers and ate. My heart melted, and melted again when he licked his fingers and took another portion. This is why I loved him. Bruiser was powerful, elegant, and rich, but there was nothing pretentious about him. I set aside my fork, and we both ate with our fingers and drank wine, watching the night's distant storm on the ocean. Lightning flickering through the clouds and down to the crashing sea, miles away, but growing closer. The breeze picked up, stunted trees danced in the wind, leaves flying away with the approaching squall. Bruiser asked casually, "Is it a magical storm, like something that Adon created?" "No," I said, "just a nightly gulf storm, Mother Nature getting in the last word." I let a pause fill the space between us as the gulf splashed and the wind soughed. I took Bruiser's hand and his fingers wrapped around mine. We sat that way for some time. We were still sitting when the tramp of feet alerted us. I set aside the huge bowl and leaned over Bruiser, kissed him gently. He tasted of pork and fancy wine and love. Battle wasn't made for quiet moments or relaxing. It was made for the kind of focus that narrowed down to life and death and survival. This break from that intensity and emphasis and single-minded concentration was probably stupid. But I felt the tension flow out of me at the touch of his lips. I breathed into his mouth and he smiled, his lips moving against mine. And it was exactly the short, peaceful break I had craved without realizing it. I pulled away slightly. "Thank you. I needed that. As did I." I tilted my head, thinking about the way I had just relaxed. "Did you just share your Honorio magic with me?"
"It's prescribed. I would never do such a thing in the midst of a Sangre Duello."
My honey bunch just lied to me. It was so sweet I wanted to cry. Instead, I said, when Tidus loses, that ship can just sail away.
Bruiser's lips pulled up slightly, though the smile never reached his eyes.
So it seems.
His tone said that he knew or guessed that Leo, or I, had that eventuality covered.
However, there are any number of treacherous strategies that the passengers on the ship might attempt, and you have made certain that most of them will not succeed.
That meant that Bruiser knew about the plan I had put in place, with my one cell phone call from the island. Interesting. G had spilled the beans. Or Alex had been listening in when I made my call and told my sweet cheeks, or something.
Okay,
I said just as softly, thinking about all the people on that ship.
Okay.
We stood 20 feet from the surf on the flat sand. A long, undulating wave train rolled in, over and over, off the gulf. The storm was coming ashore. Thunder, constant, disorganized, booming echo. Lightning striking down in blasts of light that illuminated the tossing sea. Rain in heavy sheets, visible in the flashing bursts. The wind picked up, carrying with it the ozone of lightning and the faint scent of dead fish on the otherwise clean and salty air. It wasn't a magical storm. I knew how to recognize those, but lightning. And Brute was here, which suggested that Hael, the wolf's angel, had eyes on the proceedings. Soul in dragon form zipped through the storm clouds. In human sight looked like cloud-to-cloud lightning. In beast sight, a light dragon, filling herself with power. I didn't know why, but the vision made me itchy, worried, anxious. Soul could see and alter the future when she wanted. I knew that. She knew the possible outcomes of this final duel. I shivered in the cold wind. There was something circular and cyclical about this fight beneath this storm, as if it encapsulated everything that had happened since I arrived in New Orleans. Leo took to the beach, carrying one long sword and a small sword shaped like a Gurkha Kukri, the blade roughly 12 inches long and slightly curved. Titus was similarly armed, but with straight blades. Both wore armor. Leo's hair was back in a bun that secured it from whipping in the wind. Bruiser touched my shoulder and went to stand with Brandon and Brian, the Honorios all in one place. The Outclan priestess stood across from them. They had been in that configuration all through the Sangre Duello. Arbiters and judges. Leo's people stood closest to the house. Titus's people were on the water side of the imaginary ring. The scent of lemons was faint but present, riding atop the smell of salt and vamp. The moon still shone overhead, days away still from the full phase, scudding clouds obscuring her light from time to time, casting shadows on the white sand. I took the glob in hand and stuck it in my pocket, holding it. A good luck talisman. Its magic shocked my hand. Magic captured from the lightning storm that had made it. I held the rubies and the gold nugget I never took off in my other fist against my chest. I was armed, heavily armed. But my arms and ability wouldn't decide this fight. They were useless. The combatants tapped their sword tips to the sand, though I hadn't seen that before. Maybe a remnant from the Greek fight they had both relished. The bell toned. Leo struck, Titus blocked with his short blade. It wasn't the elegance of La Destreza. It was something else. Something cruder, older, battlefield coarse. The swords clanked and clanged, thunder rumbled, lightning struck the water out at sea. The moonlight flicked beneath rushing clouds. A storm wave crashed on the shore, foamed up around us all. We spectators danced back away. Not Leo and Titus. Feet in the rising surf they fought. Cut, 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 stab, block, block, cut, cut. Rain shattered down and stopped. Wind gusted and fell still. All in the space of a dozen heartbeats. Both combatants were bleeding, the blood black in the moonlight. My hands tightened on the stones, the glob in one hand, the nugget and rubies in the other. Leo was injured. Titus was favoring his left leg. Titus dropped to one knee, sprang away. Leo was winning. Hope, deadly, foolish hope, sprang up in me. Rain pelted down fat, heavy drops that marked the sand like stars. Beast peered out through my eyes, watching everything, spotting something out in the surf, something dark and silvered, standing there. Vamps from the ship waiting to attack, smelling of lemons. Lightning hit the water far off, but close enough to feel electricity in the air, heated as angel wings along my body. Fear of lightning quivered along my nerves unresolved. The strike illuminated an image of Leo, his arm whipping forward, one knee forward, back leg outstretched, steel sword high and swooping. Killing strike. But Titus stepped to the side faster than Vamps can move. He was simply not there. I felt the magic within me shiver and sing. The magic that formed a five-pointed star, a near-perfect harmony of time and place and purpose. It pulled and twisted. Time thickened, a turgid, icy weight on the air. The gray between opened, a slice in reality, dove-gray energies with black motes of darkest power. I stepped outside of time. The noise of the surf and storm deepened, basso thrum. Titus was on the outside of sword strike, his long sword back. Titus had. Time walked. So had I, though not by choice. He had pulled me out of normal time with him, but he hadn't noticed me. His attention was intent on Leo. Raindrops glistened, hanging in the air, a thousand possibilities caught in the storm. Beast growled, reached out a paw. Time snapped back, normal, crashing loud. Titus lunged forward, straight and true, the blade taking Leo high on his chest. Lightning touched down, blinding, dazzling, only feet away. Magic captured in the glob reached for the energy in the brilliant bolt, sucked it inside to fuel its own might. Power exploded in the air, sizzled through the sand. The glob broiled, roasted in my palm, and glob magic flashed out and absorbed it, faster than the lightning could die away. Rain blasted down, drenching, scarring the sand. I was soaked through with the possibilities of the future, half blinded, but I could see enough. Leo staggered back into the surf, off balance, about to drop to one knee. Titus's sword swung forward, the weight and torque of his entire body behind it. The blade cut into Leo's neck, blood spraying into the rain. Leo's head flew into the air. His body fell. Rain shattered onto the earth. Leo died. Leo died. Rain sliced me, slashed my face, sluiced down my leather jacket. The future and the past in every drop, icy from the fall through the heavens. I screamed. Chapter 20. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Suddenly, I was in my room, digging around in the box of trinkets, pulling out the bone fragment I needed. I didn't remember getting there. Time walking. Didn't care. Beast, fighting form. Beast is ambush hunter, she thought at me. Using my hands, she grabbed a second box from under the bed, a box of bones and teeth. Shoved my hand inside. The gray between ripped across me, tore its way along my spine. My bones snapped and popped, my belly wrenched and flipped as nausea bent me double before it vanished. Pain shot through me, twisting the length of my skeleton, stretching my muscles, broadening shoulder joints, reforming hips and pelvis, twanging in my jaw as my teeth grew. I tasted blood as the tissue and bone in my mouth and jaw tried to accommodate the transformation and the new fangs, and I took on mass. The rubies on my necklace shattered. Blood-red crystals melted and disappeared. I threw back my head and screamed Beast's challenge, the sound roaring through the house and out the windows to the assembled vamps on the beach. In 10 seconds, I drew back my shoulders. I was half-form, my pawed feet stretching out the sides of the specially made combat boots, my jaw full of teeth designed to tear meat. My eyes glowed golden, but I was more. I was bigger. I was... Beast is saber-tooth lion. Beast is big. The rubies, you... Beast took mass from rubies, took snake in heart of all creatures from bones, took glob magic, gave magic to Jane. Beast is best ambush hunter. Ah, we slid the labriluck onto one arm. I took the glob into my fist, pulled the Moogle blade. I stepped back into normal time. My belly crunched, my head ached, but I shoved the pain away. I leaped through the window and landed on the porch roof, roaring my challenge. My body lit by lightning that flashed from the ordinary natural lightning storm. The vamps on the beach turned to me, looking up, as rain and lightning slashed down. The vamps rushing from the surf stopped, waiting. I shoved the crown they all wanted onto my head. My voice, a deeper octave, I screamed. To be heard over the storm, my voice a roar not heard on the earth in millennia. My voice a basso reverberation, I shouted. The Dark Queen challenges Titus Flavius Vespianus for control of the Americas and of Europe. The Dark Queen demands La Danza de los Maestros de Sangre. Titus's eyes went wide, and he stepped back into the surging waves. Lightning hit the water and the shore, a two-pronged strike. Titus vamped out, his jaw unhinging and sliding back into place. This was the first time I'd seen him in fanged form. 5-inch fangs, as long as the priestess's fangs, thick at the base and serrated. Top and bottom. Titus had dog fangs and 3-inch talons. Beast fangs are bigger. By what right do you challenge? Brandon called out. By the right of the Dark Queen, and by the death of Leo Pellissier, a death not dealt by the sword used by Titus Flavius Vespianus, but by witch magic. Vespianus cheated with witch magic outside of the protocol of Sangre Duello. Ask the witches. I pointed with the Moogle blade to Molly and Lakish, who stood together beneath a hedge of thorns that glowed like the sunrise. Ask the arc-en-ciel who watches this duello. I pointed to the clouds. Only within La Danza de los Maestros de Sangre may magic be used in battle. This challenge is legal, and it is mine. Titus must have known he was shit out of luck, because he shouted back, I accept. He shook his long and short swords at the sky. The weapons we carry, and the weapon of time, the blood of my enemy still on my blade. Here and now, I shouted back, my voice low, a growl of fury. And in time. Prepararse para la muerte. I threw myself forward, leaped from the roof and dropped toward the sand. Landed before him, my half-formed knees bending, taking the fall. I slammed Labriluck onto my head. It clamped down on me as if sealing itself to me. Unto true death, Titus screamed. The death bell rang. Battlefield time sense took over. Titus's long sword descended. He threw a smaller blade at me. In Beast's sight, I saw it spinning, flipping. I stepped aside. Beast clawed again through the gray between. Time slowed. Slowed. The consistency of frozen taffy. Time stopped. Pain speared me through my right eye. Nausea rose in a vile rush that twisted my guts. The storm was heavy, rain suspended like crystal bullets striking down. It was hard to breathe and dangerous to move. If I looked at the rain, I would see moments of time, might change moments of time. But if I didn't look directly at the drops, I focused away from the rain. The time droplets moved back out of my way, leaving regular raindrops close to me. Carefully making sure I didn't move quickly enough to accidentally alter time in any of the time drops, I ducked beneath the sword strike. Beast is best ambush hunter. Beast reached out for a droplet of rain. In it was the immediate past, the image of Titus's sword striking Leo's neck. I stopped her, thinking, trying to see what might happen if we took that small part of time. The droplet beyond it was an image of Titus's people attacking the Honorios. The droplet beyond that was an image of his people attacking the witches, a sword thrust through Molly's belly, killing her and her daughter. Lakish dead in the rain, magical implements on the sand, Eyeless dead, Cown and Tex dead. The droplet beyond that showed a bomb landing on the beach, another on the beach house. Titus's ship exploding. Everyone dead. And worse beyond that, a pathway running with blood. Every time drop near the death of Leo showed only destruction and devastation. If I went back in time and saved Leo, far worse would happen. I studied the drops, praying for that one, looking for that one, single drop that might show me another path. But every drop, each and every one, displayed the beginnings of a war between the Europeans and the American vamps. Further back were images of humans drained and dead in the streets, humans hanging from street lights in the French Quarter, bombs dropping on New Orleans, soldiers in tanks in the streets, vamps at war with the United States. Eli and Alex dead on the floor of our home. Edmund lying back to back with G, both dead, beheaded. All because I saved Leo. The pain in my head grew worse. I fought to keep my gorge down, swallowing the sickness there. Heart aching, I said aloud, "We've messed up too much as it is. We can't fix this by time walking. Beast is best ambush hunter. Beast can save Leo. No, we'll screw things up, mess up people's lives. If we save Leo, that will change something that may have been supposed to happen. No." "Beast," Jane screamed, the sound lost in the vibration of thunder. And then Titus moved. He stepped into the time bubble with me, his sword swinging down. I caught it on the curved Moogle blade and stepped close, ramming up, hit him in the jaw with an uppercut. The glob sliced his chin and busted his lips. It sucked his power away. A sudden scalding burst of might I felt in my paw, fist. Titus threw back his head and screamed. I tossed the glob high where it left the bubble of time hanging in the air, and Beast fast pulled a vamp killer, thrust with the vamp killer through his chin and up into his skull. Ripped out the knife, twisting. Titus shivered, shook, seizing as if the lightning had hit him. I slung back the arm and took Titus's head. I pushed the headless body out of the bubble of time, leaving him half-fallen and headless. Speared his head from out of time on the Moogle blade. Pulled it to me, sheathed the vamp killer. With a claw, I lifted the thin chain that still rested on the Emperor's chest. Inside was a tiny quartz crystal with a miniature arc-en-ciel inside. She was purple and gold and shimmering with fury. This explained why Sol had stuck around. One last arc-en-ciel caught in crystal. A slave to a vamp who wanted to rule time. I tucked the crystal into my pocket, reached for the glob. Carrying the head and my weapons, I left Titus's body standing, headless in the stationary raindrops. and I padded on my massive paws away from the fight. Into the storm, under the low trees. I dropped the head and fell beside it. I cried until my guts hurt, until my body felt broken and scoured and bleeding. Time still stopped. I pulled the crystal and said to the trapped dragon, I can't trust you not to bite me, so I'm going to make sure you're freed when I'm not nearby. I placed the crystal on a shell and left it there, in normal time. I picked up another shell and held it directly above the crystal, and dropped it. The shell fell from twisted time and hung suspended above the arc-en-ciel. The moment it hit, the slave to time would be free. But Leo would still be dead. I moved away from her, carrying the weapons and the head of the Emperor. A strange amalgamation of odors were caught on the heavy, salty wind. Leo's paper and ink-scented blood, a strong fragrance of fresh-cut lemons, and surf-wet werewolves. I looked out into the gulf to see the forms unmoving, caught in time as they rushed ashore through the dark. Clan des Citrons. Wet rogue werewolves were behind them, and two Grindelos were closing in from the water and the storm-drenched beach. I looked to the side. Eli was closing in, firing, caught in a sprint, angling into a safe line of fire. Derek raced beside him. Leo's vampires rushed to attack, swords and bare-handed. Daisy Moon, Del's mother, was in the lead, her sword arching back to take a De Citron vamp's head. The smell, sight, sound of Molly's earth magic, red, blue, vibrant, tearing into the night. The sight of a bighorn pack, one dropping his camera, racing to the battle. Overhead, three arc-en-ciels were in real time, dropping from the clouds, glistening in the night. And then there were Aya and Rick, rising from the water, Benelli shotguns at the shoulder. One had fired, the low, hollow thrum of shotguns, the shot hanging in the air. Slightly further back, two Navy SEALs were rising out of the water, picking off the Emperor's vamps and humans. When time returned, the wolves would howl, the vampires would scream, the stench of silver flechette rounds tearing through flesh, and the reek of poisoned blood would taint the air. My not-so-secret last-ditch defense to protect our people and to keep the military from accidentally taking us all out. Because of my phone call, Xi had made sure that Iotis, Firewind, and all the might he could call upon were a presence in the dark, in case Tidus pulled a fast one and his people attacked. All of Leo's merged paranormals were here, fighting together. Finally. But too late to save the master of the city. I should be out there. I needed to be there. I tensed to move. Pain slashed through me. I fell to the sand, hands and knees catching me, gasping. Pain like a thousand snakes in my gut biting me all at once. I screamed. Boneless, I landed on the sand. Beast padded into the forefront of my brain. She pressed down on me, sending me to sleep. Beast looked inside at Jane's snake. The snake that was at the heart of all beings was twisted, knotted, frayed. It had four strands, not the two strands it was supposed to have. It was broken. Like the body of prey that raced away and fell off a ledge into a deep place. Beast looked into Jane's belly. There were dark places there, sickness growing fast. Jane was dying, but Beast was best ambush hunter. Beast found own form and shed mass into sand on beach, stepped into form of Pumakun color, mountain lion, shifted. Beast, snake, and heart of all things was healthy, was strong. Time returned, storm throwing cold rain and lightning to ground. Arc-en-ciels dove to earth, trapped arc-en-ciel leaped for sky.
Rain beat into pelt, lightning flashed, hitting water. Hate storms, hate rain. Struggled out of Jane clothes, shook pelt. Did not help. Rain still fell, cold and wet. Beast looked out at storm, at dark forms fighting in curling water. Eli and Derek and Tequila Boys fighting, Rick and Iotis firing on vampires arising from water. Other humans with them. Hunters Jane called military. Smelled lemons and silver and blood. Smelled human blood and vampire blood. Smelled much death. Bruiser stood on sand watching fighting, seeing Leo body. Tears leaked down his face. Bruiser shed tears for friend. Fighting slowed. Tequila Boys carried bodies to shore, vampire bodies smelling of Titus and of lemons. More fighting on ship out in curling water. Derek had sent Bruiser's boat to attack Emperor's boat, was good enforcer. Derek did not need Jane now. Beast hungered. Considered head of dog-fanged king of vampires, was like alpha lion of strongest pride of African lions. Was tasty. Beast paw-paw-paw to head, licked at neck. Was tasty. Strong blood. Beast extended claws, pulled head to body, lay belly to sand, ate mouth and face of vampire. Ripped off jaw from alpha of vampire pride. Was strong blood. Strong flesh. Would stay beast for one day or five. Would be good to hunt for fish in water and kill birds nesting on shore. Crunched into skull. King of vampire brain was tasty. Much later. After sun rose and its warmth stole territory from winter night, Beast looked up. Eli was watching, leaning against tree, arms crossed to hide claws, human sign of peace. Beast chuffed, licked lips, batted parts of skull to Eli. Crown of skull whirled in sand, stopped. Beast panted, waited. Leo's in a box of blood. His head is still attached, but not by much. Probably not enough to save him. Beast growled. No. Leo head was gone, flying. Eli is stupid, Kit. Leo is dead. Eli said. And worse, an Arconciel appeared out of nowhere and bit him. Arconciel bites are psychotropic and psychotoxic. It might be months before we know if he survives and if he's sane. Beast took a soft, slow breath. Understanding. Arconciel Jane set free hadn't bitten us. Arconciel changed time. Arconciel bit Leo body. Eli kept talking. The Vodka Boys set up a distraction with George's boat, and a SEAL team boarded Titus's ship, freed the captives. The Carusos, two witches who had been using a form of Sim's obfuscation charm to hide the ship from the military, and Honorio, who hung in chains, turned all the others over to Edmund. Beast licked own jaw and muscle, free of blood, tasted good on tongue. While Sol fought her own kind and then tried to save Leo, Derek and I took the fight to the water. Rick and Iotis and a small group of SEALs caught Clan de Citron, and the rest of Titus's fangheads trying to get ashore. For once, you didn't just fly by the seat of your pants, babe. You did good setting that up officially. Iotis had the ear of the FBI, CIA. You figured he had the ear of the other government services and military, too. A tone of satisfaction entered his voice. The fangheads didn't make it ashore. Beast chuffed. Jane is sneaky. Made sound of kit call, high-pitched and sweet. Eli kept talking. Edmund already took over the reins of the U.S. territory. Leo did well to make Ed his heir. He's making peace with everyone, whether they want it or not. Eli smiled slightly. He's good at this. He's spoken to the press, to the governor, and to the members of Congress on the phone.
He's making plans to go to Europe and take over there. In your name. And he's taking Gregoire with him to take over those holdings at the same time.